We're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Hei Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. Here we're beginning another sugya that relates back to our positions in the Mishnah, and that's why the Gemara is speaking about it. At first blush, it will seem that it has nothing to do with our discussion, and then as we get into it, we'll see what the issue is that relates to our Mishnah. Which is Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tosefta in Maaser Sheni, a Braita that says, Ein lochim beima b'maot maaser sheni. One may not purchase an animal with the monies of maaser sheni. So just as background, when it comes to maot maaser sheni, the Torah tells us that maaser sheni, which is given in the first year, the second year, the fourth year, and the fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, that maaser sheni needs to be transported to Yerushalayim and eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim. That is the din of maaser sheni. The Torah gives you a dispensation, realizing that it's a long way for one to travel with all this produce up to Yerushalayim. It gives you a dispensation to transfer that kedusha onto money. And you take that money up to Yerushalayim, and then you expend the money in Yerushalayim on food items within Yerushalayim. So you'll transfer the kedusha to the money from the original Maaser Sheni, and then from the money onto edible items in Yerushalayim that you will eat as Maaser Sheni within Yerushalayim. When you go up to Yerushalayim, Chazal tell us that the primary or the best thing you should do is buy behemot, animals that will use as korbanot shlamim. So one should expend the Maaser Sheni on korbanot shlamim, because then you get two things. You get a korban that ends up on the Mizbeach, and then you end up with the edible items from that korban, and that will serve as the Maaser Sheni, or the usage of the Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. So this is surprising to say that Ein lochim beiba b'maot Maaser Sheni, because that would be the primary utilization of Ma'ot Maaser Sheni. So as Rashi notes over here, this is someone who's trying to do this outside of Yerushalayim. So the Torah tells you that we have this dispensation that you can switch into monies, and then switch from the money back into edible items inside of Yerushalayim. But this individual decided that he didn't want to take the money up, or he wanted to expend the money before he got to Yerushalayim. Therefore he pays for an animal outside of Yerushalayim with Ma'ot Maaser Sheni. So now it says, Ein lochim beima b'maot maaser sheni. The question is, why? So Rashi says over here, the reason is, Chuz Rishayim dechtiv etzarta kesef biyadecha. Rashi says that it's a derivative of the fact that you have to take the money up to Yerushalayim. So the fact that you're expending it, and now you're going to take the animal up to Yerushalayim instead of the money, is a violation of etzarta kesef biyadecha. The other explanation is, V'od, Shema tachish b'torach hadarech. That maybe the animal will be weakened by the transport. Which is that if you expend the ma'ot maaser sheni on a behema, and then you transport that behema up to Yerushalayim, the behema will be worth less by the time it gets to Yerushalayim because of the moving or difficulty of getting up to Yerushalayim and the wear and tear on the animal. It's going to lose value, and therefore that would be the restriction. So Rashi says, for one of those two reasons, there is a restriction against you expending the money outside of Yerushalayim. Gemara in Beitza talks about, also there was a gzeirah around Yerushalayim, around the areas around Yerushalayim, that the people there were not allowed to exchange their items onto money because they wanted to maintain that there would be produce and other things available within Yerushalayim. So they created a perimeter around Yerushalayim where you weren't allowed to redeem and bring the monies up to Yerushalayim. Otherwise, you'd have a problem where everybody was trying to expend capital inside of Yerushalayim and buy supplies of food that don't exist. So there was a requirement of a certain periphery around Yerushalayim where they had to bring the items up to Yerushalayim, or they forced you not to use monetary means. So therefore, that there would be a more balance between the Ma'ot Maaser Sheni and the produce that was found in Yerushalayim. Now, Tosafot takes issue with Rashi. In the case of Tzarta Kesef B'yadecha, he says, V'lo Nehira, Zabin and Kesef Tzura, Haino Dachla Derech Chilul, that the requirement for Kesef Tzura, or the Kesef, what Tosafot is talking about, what Rashi seems to note over here is, that Tzarta Kesef B'yadecha is a requirement by Chazal that the money that you use is minted coinage, that it has a picture on the coin, and that's what it says, Tzura, Tzarta Kesef B'yadecha. But that requirement is only Derech Chilul. That's when you're transferring the Kedusha off of the Maaser Sheni onto the money. After that, there seems to be no requirement in terms of the tzartha kesef biyadecha that you can't do something with it. Therefore, Tosfot does not see that as producing an iser in any way. He says that maybe for the second lashon in Rashi, it's not as problematic. He has other questions over here. And maybe you could push it through and explain it that way. But he says he'd rather offer a third alternative here, which is a kach near the re. The phrase "Anu taima dein lochim beimot gezera shemi gadel adarim adarim." That we're worried about you buying animals and then bringing up flocks and flocks of these animals, and in the process, obviously, of building up his eder, there's a chance of michshol, which is somebody will utilize or misappropriate the maisu sheni from the animals that he doesn't know are all these animals of maisu sheni, which is that you have no incentive to take it up to Yerushalayim. Now you have this animal maisu sheni, and you produce flocks and flocks of maisu sheni. So basically, you'll postpone the necessity to go up to Yerushalayim, and in the interim, you'll produce larger and larger amounts of maisu sheni. So in a sense, it accrues to your benefit, because the maisu sheni is yours to eat when you go up to Yerushalayim. And so for that fear, we don't want you purchasing an animal with the ma'ot maisu sheni, because then it will result in you bringing up these adarim, adarim. It's like the equivalent of putting it into a tax-deferred annuity. You don't pay the taxes today, you have to pay taxes in the end, but in the meantime, it builds or it accrues returns that are in excess because you have more money that's working. So it's over here. You have an animal that's working for you and producing animals for you. In the end, you have to take it up to Yerushalayim. Yes. That's the beginning of this braita. Now, this is where it opens up. Vim lakach bishogeg. If he purchased it unintentionally, meaning that he didn't realize that these were ma'ot maisu sheni, so he didn't intend to purchase an animal with ma'ot maisu sheni, but he does. Yachzeru damim limkomam. The money goes back to its place. As Rashi says over here, kufina mocher, we compel the seller, lachzir damim demekach ta'otu. It is a mistake over here. The individual was purchasing with ma'ot maisu sheni, of course did not intend to use ma'ot maisu sheni, and now he just caused himself a huge problem. Which is, until now, all he had to do was transport the money up to Yerushalayim. Now he's got a whole animal that he's got to transport up to Yerushalayim. So it's clearly not his intent. It is a mekach ta'ot. And so therefore, the Mishnah says, we compel the mocher to unwind the transaction because of the fact that it wasn't a transaction that the person wanted. There is a mekach ta'ot over here. Bimezid. On the other hand, if he does it intentionally, man, this individual wants to exchange the money back onto a beima, Taleh v'tochal b'makom. Then he's forced to take it up to the makom. Makom means to Yerushalayim. Makom eshei v'char Hashem. And then he has to eat it up in Yerushalayim. He did it on purpose. So now he's got to bear the burden of what he did, which is he's got to transport it up to Yerushalayim. Now, Amar Rav Yehuda, b'med varim amurim. When is this true? According to Rashi, this is modifying the statement of Mezid. It is not modifying the statement of Shogeg, because of the nature of the statement is bimit kavein, if he intends. If he intends, then he's not a Shogeg. So therefore Rashi says this modification or qualification is only about the case of Mezid. That is true, bimit kavein, v'lakach t'chila l'shem shlamim. That if he purchased it as a shlamim. So here, he intends to use the ma'ot maser sheni for their primary purpose, which is to purchase shlamim inside of Yerushalayim. The only deficit here is that he did it outside of Yerushalayim. So if he does that, we penalize him and say, you did this outside of Yerushalayim, now you've got to bear the burden of doing it outside of Yerushalayim, and you've got to transport the animal up to Yerushalayim because you expended it here instead of in Yerushalayim. And the ma'ot maser sheni now transferred the kedusha back onto this animal, and you must deal with it. Aval, mitzakavein lotzi ma'ot maser sheni dechulin. On the other hand, if his intent is not to buy a behemah shlamim and then transport it to Yerushalayim, but rather to really expend the maisur sheni lechulin. He wants to get this ma'ot maisur sheni out to chulin, and what Rashi says here is, he wants to then eat the behemah outside of Yerushalayim. He has no intent of bringing this up to Yerushalayim. He wants to get the kedusha off this money onto an animal, and eat the animal where he is right there and then. Ben b'shogeg, ben b'mezid. So now, according to Rashi, it goes back and reviews the din here. Ben b'shogeg, shogeg means the original shogeg that we mentioned in the Mishnah. Or ben b'mezid means this latter explanation of mezid. The case of mezid where he's intending to move it to chulin. Yachzeru damim limkomam. The transaction is unwound. And Rashi explains why over here. In the first case, we understand b'shogeg why the transaction is unwound is because there's a mekach ta'ot. The guy never intended to use ma'ot maisu sheni. He's now in a terrible bind because he's now made it that he has to transport an animal instead of the money up to Yerushalayim. And there we say it's a mekach ta'ot, unwind the transaction. In the case of Mezid, why do we compel the mocher, the seller here, to unwind the transaction? The only person with bad intent over here, according to Rashi, is the buyer. He wanted to get the Maismot, Maisushin, he wanted to get the Kedusha off of them onto the Behemah, and he succeeds. And then he wants to eat the Behemah over here. And then we say, no, unwind the transaction. Why are we forcing the mocher, why are we penalizing the mocher to unwind the transaction when he did nothing wrong? So Rashi claims that the mocher did do something wrong here, which is that he was, this week's parsha, lifnei iver, lo tinteg michshol. Avon mocher ze yudea, shamaot mitchalolot ala behemah. V'chulin hein biyado. He knows that when he exchanges the animal for the money, the kedusha will transfer from the money onto the animal, and the maot, the money that he gets, is chulin, and he's fine. V'avara lifnei iver, lo tinteg michshol. De yudea, shalokeach mitkaven lochla bi'iro. And he's in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Titeh Mechshol because he knows the buyer intends to eat it here and not transport it to Yerushalayim. So Rashi says that this braita from the Tosefta Maisu Sheni is telling us two dinim in the expenditure of Ma'ot Maisu Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. One is if it's done unintentionally, then it's a Mekach Ta'ot and we unwind that transaction. On the other hand, Mimei Zid, there is a bifurcation of the din. If Mezid, and he intends to use the Ma'ot Maisu Sheni properly, meaning to bring it up to Yerushalayim afterwards, then he has got to do that. He's got to take the animal up and the transaction goes through. On the other hand, if he just wants to get rid of this Ma'ot Maisu Sheni and eat the animal right here, again, we force the transaction to be unwound. This time because, not that we could do anything about the lokeach, because he wants to do something bad over here, but we're penalizing the mocher because he allowed or facilitated the ability for this individual to eat the ma'ot maisu sheni outside of Yerushalayim. He knew that this guy wasn't going to transport it to Yerushalayim, and he knows this guy is going to violate the isur of eating maisu sheni outside of Yerushalayim, and he still went ahead and sold him the animal. So we say, no, unwind the transaction. And you take your animal back, you give him his money back, and seemingly the Ma'ot Maisu Sheni now will, then the Behemah that has the Kedusha on it, whether that Kedusha remains on the Behemah or is transferred back to the monies, is not clear in this unwinding of the transaction, but let's assume that it's completely unwound, and now the Ma'ot Maisu Sheni and back in this guy's hands. So that's the way Rashi explains this braita. So now Tosfot over here discusses a number of items, and he disagrees with Rashi step by step about the explanation of this braita for numerous reasons. The first thing that Tosfot argues about Rashi is whether you are actually successful when you do this b'shogeg. Are you successful at actually causing the kedusha to transfer to the animal? There, Tosfot says that he then doesn't understand what the penalty to the mocher is. We're going to see later on in the Gemara that this is a knas, a penalty on the mocher, and we force the unwinding of the transaction. Im tomar ma knasu the mocher ba'ach the adra berevachu lo shipater la'alot Yerushalayim. That the mocher is in a better situation because he won't have to go up to Yerushalayim now if you unwind the transaction. What's clear from Tosfot is he thinks that when you do this, you are not successful at transferring the Kedusha, and therefore the money remains Ma'ot Maiser Sheni, and the Mocher is stuck with Ma'ot Maiser Sheni, and now he's got to get them up to Yerushalayim. So if he's got to get them up to Yerushalayim, then what's the penalty of unwinding this? It's actually a better deal for him to unwind this, because then he doesn't have to deal with going up to Yerushalayim. So he says, V'yishlamar devadai knasulo, mashanu omrim yachzeru damim nikumam, because the other way we could deal with this is to say that he doesn't have to take them up to Yerushalayim, so that we will force the lokeach to deal with it, to eat the equivalent Maisu Sheni in Yerushalayim, which we'll see in a Mishnah later on, that will force the lokeach to eat money equivalent of food in Yerushalayim to take care of the Kedusha. So there are alternatives to solve the problem, and those alternatives would be better for the mocher. The fact that we don't give him those alternatives and force the unwinding of the transaction, that's to the detriment of the mocher. And in the case of Mezid, again, Tosfot later on makes a similar assumption that when these transactions go through, if the Kedusha remains with the mocher, and the mocher is in a problematic state rather than the lokeach, and we'll see that again later on. Secondarily, Tosfot then asks all these questions on Rashi, all the questions that you've been raising now. First of all, how does the mocher know that the lokeach is trying to do something untoward with this ma'ot maisu sheni? Number two is, atu b'rishe askinan. Why is a braita tosefta dealing with rishayim that are trying to eat maisu sheni outside of Yerushalayim? That does not seem like the normal case or a case that a braita would deal with. Number three is, he says, I don't see lifnei iver lo titen michshol. That is because lifnei iver lo titen michshol only applies when you facilitate the ability for someone to do this where he couldn't have done it with anyone else. Which is that you are the one who causes him to do the aveira because you facilitate it. What's called trei evrei denaro. That you're on two sides of the river. There's a zir on one side of the river, you're on the other side of the river, and he needs wine, he wants to drink wine. And you pass him the wine across the river, which he cannot access on the other side of the river, then you've made it or facilitated his ability to drink wine when he is a nazir. Then you're chayav for lifnei iver lo titen michshol. Then if you're b'chad avra denaro, you're on the same side of the river, and you pass him the wine where he could have gotten it himself or from someone else anyway, then you're not in violation of lifnei iver, because you did not facilitate something that he couldn't have otherwise done himself. There might be problems with what's called misayel over avira, but there's definitely no lifnei iver lo titen michshol. Tosfot says over here, this guy could equally buy a behemah from another party as he could from this party. There's no issue of lifnei iver lo titen michshol. And v'od kasho, the mashmei toch v'yusho shebehemah nitpeseh b'kdusha v'amamot nitchalulu. Here again, this is what I just said before, the Rashi seems to indicate that you're successful at transferring the kdusha from the money onto the behemah. V'chi mishum knas nemru shiachzru domim nukomam. And because of the kanas, now we're going to reverse the transaction and say that the kedusha moves back to the money and the behema becomes chulin, and now the seller can eat this behema outside of Yerushalayim. Which is your question. Once you've transferred the kedusha according to Rashi, how do you reverse this transaction? How do you unwind this transaction? The last of his questions relates to the next piece of the Gemara, which we're going to see in a second, is the question from Rabbi Yehuda. And it's a problem because the case that Rabbi Rashi explains over here does not match the issue that we're going to ask from our Mishnah in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. The cases that seem to have nothing to do with each other. And therefore, according to Rashi, why is it even a question from Rabbi Yehuda when you're dealing with a case that's totally different? And Radosva therefore says, L'kach peirushri, aval mitzkaven lotzi ma'ot masir sheni l'chulim klomar. This is the explanation. Shehidna ima mocher shalot tachul kedushat ma'ot al beima. They have come to an agreement that he will pay him with ma'ot ma'isur sheni, and that the money will not transfer, the kedusha from the money will not transfer onto this animal. Ela ma'ot yubi kedusha. The monies will remain kadosh, v'ala mocher la'alotam l'Yerushalayim. And the mocher now is responsible to take them up to Yerushalayim. So the animal he can eat over here, that's not a problem, the animal is chulin. Because that was the condition of the sale. The mocher is the one burdened now with the ma'ot ma'isur sheni. Why do we then say unwind the transaction? What are we worried about here? So that's what he says. The chashinan shema yochlem ha'mocher chutz l'Yerushalayim. What we're afraid of is that the mocher himself, once he gets the money, will use that money outside of Yerushalayim. You have the same question on Tosfot at the Birushei Askinan. He knows it's ma'ot ma'isur sheni. Why would he eat them outside of Yerushalayim? Because he thinks in his mind, yes, they made this side deal that when the money was passed to him, the ma'ot ma'isur sheni, that the kedusha would not transfer onto the animal but remain on the money. What he thinks in his head is, that was nice, but it really didn't work. The halacha is that when you transfer money and you buy something, the kedusha transfers. So in the mocher's mind, he says, even though we made this side deal, I really think it didn't work. And since it didn't work, then the kedusha transferred to the animal and I'm free and clear to use this money. So that's why the Chachamim say knas, unwind this transaction, because we have a fear that the mocher is going to think the transaction was successful without the condition, and he does not have ma'ot. He doesn't have money that is ma'isa sheni, but rather ma'ot chulin. So that's the knas on the mocher to unwind that transaction. Right, so our assumption here, I think Tosfos says it later, is that he made a profit on this. So when you force him to unwind it, he's going to lose the profit on the behemah. So the knas is that we force the unwinding of the transaction. That is a knas. Even though it's preventative in nature to protect the mocher from doing something wrong, nevertheless, when we unwind it, it is a penalty to him because he's going to lose the profit that he made on this deal. V'anantan. This is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah here, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'mezid kidesh. That if a person expends ma'ot ma'isur sheni intentionally, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's done b'mezid, you are successful at generating kiddushin. Rehuda believes that ma'ot ma'isur sheni are ma'on ba'alim, and therefore if you utilize them to be mekadesh and isha, it works. B'mezid, for sure. Bishogeg, it doesn't work. That's only because the woman doesn't have the information, and or he doesn't want to expend ma'ot ma'isur sheni in this manner. So when it's done in an unintentional manner, we say that it is kiddushay ta'ot. That's what we saw in Rehuda earlier. But when you do it b'mezid, it works. So now, for Tosafot, the question is very easy. This is the exact same case. which is, here you have a woman who's accepting Ma'ot Meiser Sheni, which are Kadosh Ma'ot Meiser Sheni. She accepts them as Kiddushim, and now she's got to transport them to Yerushalayim. It goes through. We say the Kiddushim work, and she's got to transport them to Yerushalayim. So going to Tosafot, why don't we say the same thing in the case of the Mocher? The Mocher sold the animal with the condition that the monies would remain Kadosh. So now he gets Ma'ot Meiser Sheni. Let us say, just like the Kiddushin, the transaction goes through. And now the Mocher, the seller, has to transport them to Yerushalayim. Just like the woman, who is the quote-unquote seller of herself to this individual, has to transport the money to Yerushalayim. These are identical cases. In one case, we say the transaction goes through. In the other case, we say we force the unwinding of the transaction. Why would you do that? Why are the cases not similar over here? That's the question according to the Balei HaTosafot. On the other hand, for Rashi, who says the whole case here is where someone is trying to buy an animal here, to eat it outside of Yerushalayim, to misuse the Ma'ot Meiser Sheni, in a sense, to transfer the Kedushah to the money, and leave the monies with the Ma'ot Meiser Sheni with the owner, and then be free and clear to eat his behemah over here. And yet we say that you have to unwind the transaction. The comparison to the case of Kiddushin is very precarious now, because he engaged a woman with Ma'ot Meiser Sheni, and now she has to transport them up to Yerushalayim. There's no untoward behavior over here. He's not trying to do anything wrong over here. He did it intentionally. He shouldn't have used Ma'ot Meiser Sheni, but nevertheless, he's successful. So what you have to say to Rashi is, yes, that's the problem over here. You're trying to use them for Kiddushin when you shouldn't have used them for Kiddushin. And that's the untoward behavior. So why don't we ask there to unwind the transaction, because he was trying to use Ma'ot Meiser Sheni to engage this woman, to have Kiddushin with this woman, when he shouldn't have done that. And so if he did something wrong, then why don't we say that the woman is problematic here, because it's like Lifnei Yiver Lo Titen Michshol. And if she facilitates the ability to get married in this manner, but maybe we should also penalize him in this case, or in the other case, we should not reverse the transaction, and just say it's the responsibility of the Mocher to get it up to Yerushalayim. The answer is, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Isha Yudat, Shein Ma'ot Maser Sheni Mitchalim Al Yada, Vola Vocholto Yerushalayim. A woman knows that the transaction, according to Tosafot, is successful, meaning that the monies retain their kedusha of Ma'ot Meiser Sheni, and the woman is well aware that she's going to have to transport that up to Yerushalayim. On the other hand, the Mocher, as we said before, makes a mistake and thinks that even though they made that condition in the transaction, but the virtue of there was a transaction, he thinks that the kedusha left the money. And so the difference in their understandings of the transaction is what leads us to a different conclusion. The woman is going to take it up to Yerushalayim, so we don't worry about it. Mocher is not going to take it up to Yerushalayim, so that's why we're worried and we unwind the transaction. According to Rashi, by the Mishnah, Lekka L'miknesei Klau, in our Mishnah there's no reason for a knas, the Isha Yodat, V'lo Nitkavna Lotzi L'chulin. That here in the case, by the Kiddushin case, the woman is not doing anything wrong. They never intend for the Ma'ot Chulin to be used in the wrong manner, or to be made Chulin. They intend to take up the Ma'ot Meiser Sheni to Yerushalayim. It's just not him now, it's going to be the woman who has to take it up. But nobody tried to remove the Kedusha of Meiser Sheni, or tried to eat the Ma'ot Meiser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. Whereas in the case of the transaction, the guy is trying to buy an animal with these Ma'ot Meiser Sheni, and then eat the animal, be Kedushat Meiser Sheni, outside of Yerushalayim. So since he wants to do something wrong, then we have a problem, and now we need to unwind it. There's a facilitator, Lifnei Yiver Lo Titen Michshol, and we're going to penalize and try to unwind the transaction. Over here, both parties know that it's Ma'ot Meiser Sheni. All they've done is transfer the responsibility from the man to the woman to take it up to Yerushalayim. But nobody plans on eating this Ma'ot Meiser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. So because of that, according to Rashi, that's the difference in the cases. One case is dealing with someone who's tried to do something problematic. In the other case is a case where everybody knows the situation and plans to do the right thing here and take the Ma'ot Meiser Sheni up to Yerushalayim. Now the Gemara challenges that and says, Matifla Rabbi Yirmiyah, Varebe Matmeya Abadim V'Karkot. These are all items that one may not use Ma'ot Meiser Sheni to purchase with them, because they are not edible. They are not food items that you can use. Bei Matmeya is not edible. Abadim V'Karkot are clearly not food items, they are property, and you can't, you expend Ma'ot Meiser Sheni to buy property. Everybody knows that you can't use Ma'ot Meiser Sheni for these items because they're clearly not edible. And we have a Mishnah, in luchim beimah, tmeya, bavadim, makarkol, b'mot, maestro sheni, afilu b'Yerushalayim. Forget about outside Yerushalayim. Even in Yerushalayim, you can't expend the money. Vim lakach, if he does do it, yuchal kenegdan. Then he has to eat the equivalent value of ma'ot maeser sheni. So you see here that even in a case where we know that you're not supposed to do this, or we have information, we still, the Gemara says that in the case where you have the woman having kiddushin, and what you're doing is transferring the liability of bringing it up to Yerushalayim from the man to the woman, and we say because she knows it's ma'ot ma'aser sheni, we allow that transaction to go through, and she has responsibility to take it up. So the Gemara is asking exactly the question that you're asking, which is, why can't I transfer the ma'ot, kedusha ma'ot ma'aser sheni onto these other items, with the assumption that I will then transfer it back when I get to Yerushalayim, meaning that people know that this doesn't work, and that these aren't proper utilization of ma'ot ma'aser sheni. So what are they doing? They're basically consolidating the value, either on land or on an eved, which is much easier to transport up to Yerushalayim, or can help them out with the transport to Yerushalayim. With land you can, because the land stays stationary, and then he can sell the title inside of Yerushalayim. So he can monetize it in Yerushalayim without having to do any work anymore. When he goes to expend the money on these items, the Mishnah says you cannot do this. So then, if you can't do this, when the transaction goes through, the ma'ot ma'aser sheni remain ma'ot ma'aser sheni, because the transaction is, quote-unquote, unsuccessful. So this guy goes up to Yerushalayim with whatever he purchased, the Beima Tamea or the Eved. The Ma'ot Ma'aser Sheni are with the person who sold him the item. The Mocher has them outside Yerushalayim. And they're still Kadosh B'Ma'aser Sheni. But the Mocher knows that you can't transfer Kedusha from Ma'ot Ma'aser Sheni onto these items. And therefore he knows he's holding Ma'ot Ma'aser Sheni. And so just like the woman who accepted that for Kiddushin and has to transport them up to Yerushalayim, has to go up to Yerushalayim then, so too the seller here should have to go up to Yerushalayim. But that's not what we say happens. We say that when he gets to Yerushalayim, the lokeach has to then expend money, keneged the money that he gave the mocher. We don't assume the mocher will bring it up to Yerushalayim. We say that the lokeach, the yomar, and he has to go to Yerushalayim now and say, kol makom shamot b'yad mocher, wherever the mocher is holding the money, yu mechudolot aleilu. It'll be transferred onto this food that I have in Yerushalayim, v'yaleim v'yaleim b'Yerushalayim, and he has to eat it in Yerushalayim. So we make it the burden of the lokeach to deal with it, and not like the case by the woman, where she is the one burdened with transporting it up to Yerushalayim. So you see that knowledge in and itself is not enough of a reason to say that the individual will take care of the situation. We said before that the woman knows, therefore she'll take it up to Yerushalayim. Here we know that the seller knows, right, and yet we don't assume that he'll take it up to Yerushalayim. We force the lokeach to deal with it. Ella hocha b'isha chavira skinan diyada. As Rashi points out, the Mishnah is talking about a woman who is well-versed in halacha, and therefore will take care of it. So what we have are different levels of knowledge. We have a level of knowledge where the woman knows that this is ma'ot ma'aser sheni, but not only does she know, but she will deal with it properly, and therefore transport it up to Yerushalayim. In that case, we say that the kiddushin are good, and the woman deals with the ma'ot ma'aser sheni. In the case by the abadim, the karkaot, and the be'imah tmeyah, where he does know that ma'ot ma'aser sheni don't transfer, that much he does know. But he doesn't have the type of knowledge to think that he really will have to take up the ma'ot ma'aser sheni to Yerushalayim. He thinks that there's some way that this is going to take care of, and he won't have to transport up to Yerushalayim. He does not think that he is responsible for that. Aval stam mocher lo yadash in ma'aser mitchalala be'imat me'ah. Stam mocher doesn't know that. He kind of has some information, some idea that it shouldn't work, but he doesn't have full knowledge, and therefore he thinks it works. And then basically he's transferring, like you want to suggest here, free and clear. If he thinks he's free and clear, he's not going to take the money up to Yerushalayim, so we penalize the lokeach. As the Tosfot Rias Hakein explains over here, stam adinche v'nishay, avagav d'shaychi b'inyana, even though they have some idea what's going on in these situations, lo b'kiyei b'kulu dinin. They don't know all the dinim. And that's why, even though they might have some semblance of knowledge about these issues, they don't know the intricacies of the halacha. And that's why we will not trust them, as opposed to an isha chavira, who has a grasp not only on the basics, but on the intricacies of the halacha. And the first bright that we brought from the Tosefta, the reason that we unwind the transaction there is because, in that case, there is untoward behavior. As opposed to the case by the Kiddushin, as opposed to the case here by that when he wants to buy the Beima Tamei or the Karkot, he's not trying to not bring the Ma'ot Ma'aser Sheni up to Yerushalayim. He might be transferring the responsibility to someone else, but all the parties involved think that they have to bring it up to Yerushalayim. And so therefore, it's different than the case before, where he's intentionally, according to Rashi, trying to eat it outside of Yerushalayim. According to the Balei Tosafot, where there was a condition that would have forced the money to retain its kedusha, and there the mocher would have thought otherwise. But over here also, the mocher thinks that it's otherwise. He thinks that when you buy the Beimat Meir, it works, and now we force the lokeach to deal with it. So now for the Balei Tosafot, the question is very obvious. The next question of the Gemara is, why in one case did you penalize the mocher, and in the other case you penalize the lokeach? And for Rashi, you could understand the question, but for Tosafot it's so obvious, because the only question is, you both had transactions where the mocher thinks he doesn't have to deal with the money. Because in one case, you made a specific and stated the reason that it's going to remain kadosh, and the mocher says, yeah, but I don't think it works, and he's not going to transport it up to Yerushalayim. Or in our case, where we said the mocher doesn't know that money doesn't transfer onto Behemah, Tamiah, Karkot, and Abadim, and therefore he's not going to transport it up to Yerushalayim. In either case, why are we in one case we're penalizing the mocher, in one case we're penalizing the Konen, the buyer. So that's what Tosafot says. For Rashi, it'll be the same problem: is why is the penalty shifted around? It's as if he does this, he has to buy in Yerushalayim and eat Kenegdam. Vamai, yachzeru dam avlim komam. Unwind the transaction like you did before, which is the way to do it. Kihatam, like we said in the Tosefta that we brought before. Amashmuel kishibarach, where the guy ran away. The mocher ran away, so we can't unwind the transaction. Not literally that he has run away, it's just that he's not here. He's not available for us to unwind the transaction. So there's no way to unwind the transaction here. So that's why we forced the lokeach to deal with it. But had we had the ability to unwind the transaction, we would unwind the transaction. The problem with Tosafot's pshat, which is that the monies are kadosh with the mocher now, a case here is a case where the mocher ran away, and the lokeach has to deal with it. Well, how can the lokeach deal with it if the kedusha resides with the mocher? How can you unwind a transaction and reverse the kedusha here if the item that is kadosh is not present? So Tosafot gives two answers later on. One of the Riva, who suggests that it's a knas on the lokeach. Then in Ochanami, the ma'ot remain kadosh with the mocher. This is a penalty on the lokeach that he'll have to then replace those monies, and you really will get a double count on the item. That means that there will be kadosh meiser sheni in the hands of the mocher, and will penalize the lokeach to also bring up equivalent meiser sheni, and then you'll have basically a double of the meiser sheni, and that's the knas. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Meir suggests that over here it's a zchut for the mocher. If you remove the kedushat meiser sheni from his money, it's a zchut for him. And Tosafot l'shitato believes that zchiyah is mihushum shlichut. When zochin shadam shlo b'fanav, you do it derech shlichut, through agency. Therefore, since it's agency, you're able to then remove the kedusha from the item, even without the item being present, because it's the equivalent of being bershutcha, because you're acting as an agent of that individual. So Tosafot overcomes that difficulty of the kedusha being in the hands of the mocher and the lokeach dealing with it, because of either the fact that it's really just a penalty on the lokeach and it remains kadosh with the mocher, or because of the fact that it's a zchut for the mocher, we allow you as the lokeach to deal with it even though it's not present and the mocher is not present. Gemara says, "Halo barach, had he not ran away, kansin on the mocher." We penalize the mocher. Now the Gemara asks the basic question, "Benikta say the lokeach." Why are we penalizing the mocher? We should be penalizing the lokeach. Now for Rashi, that's very obvious what the question is, because over there the lokeach is the one who wants to try in the Tosefta to eat the mold meiser sheni outside of Yerushalayim. Why are you penalizing the mocher for lifnei iver? The guy himself is the problem. For Tosafot, it's a less strong question. This always happens. For Rashi's havamina is much weaker, and therefore the questions are much stronger in the back end. For Tosafot, he creates a stronger havamina, and therefore the questions in the back end aren't as stronger or weaker. So why would you want to penalize the lokeach here? All right, because he was a party to this transaction where he was trying to maintain the kedusha on the monies and force the responsibility onto the mocher. So since he didn't want to take responsibility, he's forcing the responsibility to another party, why isn't he the one that gets penalized? He says, "Lavachrocha ganav, elachora ganav." He says, wait a minute, it's not the mouse that steals, it's the hole in the wall that steals. Which is that it's not the mocher who's doing the wrong here, because the mocher is only able to do this because the lokeach is providing the situation or circumstances for it, just like the hole provides the circumstances for the achbar to run away, and therefore the hole is responsible. It says, "V'ach le'yo achbar chora maya gavid." Without the mouse, the hole is useless. And so it's over here. Without the lokeach, the mocher can't do any of this. The lokeach is necessary party to this whole situation. You're saying that the mocher is the one responsible because he's like the whole, he provided all the situation and facilitated everything here. But without the lokeach, there nothing would happen. So Gemara says, Mistavra, kohechadika yisura autum katzinan. Wherever the Isur sits, that's where we penalize. So that in the case where the Ma'ot, Ma'isur Sheni, sit with the Mocher now, that's where we're going to initiate the penalty, because he's the one with the problem. The Mocher has the Ma'ot, Ma'isur Sheni, and therefore the penalty is going to be levied on him, and we're going to force the unwinding of the transaction. But in the case where he barach, when he's not around, then we're going to force the lokeach to deal with it. But otherwise, the person holding the problem is the one that's responsible, and now we're going to have to unwind the situation. So now Tosafot then deals with the dispute he had with Rashi as to whether the transaction is successful or not successful over here as to where the Kedusha sits. He says, Perish, Vaino Mocher, Sharia Mot, the Maisir Bishuto Abikaime. Because the Mot, Maisir Sheni, are with the Mocher. Vizot Dochak, the Perish Riva, the Perish Olam Mot, Shibet Mocher, Kedushim, Mikdushat Maisir, Vitzarik Lalotam Nishraim. Imkain, Adraba, Zchutulo. Because now what you're doing, in unwinding the transaction, you're actually benefiting the Mocher. He actually has Ma'ot Ma'isur Sheni in his hands, and he'd have to take him up to Yerushalayim. You unwind the transaction, he gets a Beimat Chulin back, and he's in a much better situation. Peshram Necha.
Because if we force the burden onto the Lokeach, it will remove the Kedusha from the Mocher's property. Now that we cause him to unwind the transaction, the Mocher loses out, because he would have kept the item had we penalized the Lokeach and had no problems with Kedusha. Now he has to unwind the whole transaction.
But it's still problematic for Rashi earlier. So Yesh Lomar, in the final set, this is what I had told you before, Tosfot says, HaKnas Avi Mizeh Demistama Lakacha Beima Biyoker Mimaot Ma'isur Sheni Lipater Atzmo Mialot Yerushalayim. He obviously paid a premium for this benefit of not having to take his animal up to Yerushalayim. It means that the Mocher knew about it, and he was getting a premium here, and he made off with a nice profit. And so then when you're unwinding it, yes, you're releasing him from having to take it up to Yerushalayim, but you're also taking away his large profit that he made on this deal, and that's why in the end it's a knas against the Mocher.
Even though it still leaves a residual problem that the Isur is sitting with the Lokeach and not the Mocher, and here the Gemara says that the knas goes on the individual who's holding the Isur, which seemingly is the Mocher and not the Lokeach.
Next Mishnah. All of these items are Isurei Hana'a. Items that not only can you not eat, but you cannot get any benefit from them. If he utilizes these items to marry a woman, Eina Mikudeshit. She is not married. All the Rishonim ask over here, this list is obviously not exhaustive. There are other cases of Isurei Hana'a, and yet they're not enumerated in our Mishnah. So the Baalei HaTosafot asks the question, they suggest, oh, things dealing with Kodashim are not in this list. Things that have a machloket associated with them maybe are not listed here. In the end, the simplest answer is that the list is not exhaustive. It's Tana Vishir. He listed a bunch of items that you get the good idea, but obviously there is a much more extensive list of Isurei Hana'a that you cannot use. And all of these items, which the Gemara will deal with, what the Isurei Hana'a are in all of these items, so I'm not going to detail them now because today's daf and tomorrow's daf, the Gemara will go through one by one explaining what the Isurei Hana'a is associated and what the problem is with each of these items. The Chiddush of this Mishnah seemingly is the second half of the Mishnah, which is Machran. You sell the Isurei Hana'a, the Kidesh, Bidmehem, Mikudeshet. And you use the money for Kiddushin, it works. Because unlike by Hekdesh and Ma'isur Sheni, where when you transfer the items and purchase something with them, the Kiddushah transfers from that object onto the money, what's called Nitpas, that's not true by Isurei Hana'a. The Isurei Hana'a does not transfer from those objects onto the money. So the money you have here is free and clear, and if you use it for Kiddushin, it will work. The items themselves remain Isurei Hana'a, and that's why the Chiddush of the Mishnah is if you use that money. The truth is, it might be a much bigger Chiddush than we're thinking, because he's really a thief over here. He sold Isurei Hana'a, which are worthless, and he took money from them, so it's almost Gezel Biyado, and now that money that he has stolen, he's using for Kiddushin, and they are successful. So you could say one of two ways. Either he's getting Hana'a by the money, being used because he's getting enough from it, or he's a thief because they're worthless and he's taking the money. Either way you say it, he's done something wrong. But the case where you say he's getting enough from it, it doesn't matter. That's one Isur. The money is a separate issue. So the answer might be he sold them to a guy. So somebody could use him or doesn't care about the Isur. So technically, he's in violation of the Isur Anah, because now he gets money for it, but he's not in violation of Gezel. That's one way to deal with it, is that he gave it to a Goy instead of to a Jew who's using it. Or you have to suggest that since the guy knows the Isur Anah, when he buys them from him, it's as if he's giving the Ma'ot as a Matanah to him. And so that's how you get around that problem of Gezel. Or for whatever other scenarios that you can come up with where there is no Gezel. So there is a Machlokot in the Rishonim, but this proves that money of Gezel works for Kiddushin. Or the case you come up with is a scenario where it's not Gezel, but he violated the Isur Anah. And violating the Isur Anah, we don't say that the Isur transfers onto the money, and the money is free and clear to use for Kiddushin. That seemingly is the big Chiddush of this Mishnah. You can see here in the Tosfot Riya Zakeni says, Machran, Avaru Machran Mutarim. If he goes out and sells them, they are Mutar Sha Damim Mutarim She'enon Tofsim Dmeem, like our Mishnah says. But he says, but then in the Gemara Nidorim it says, Afo Pi She'en Tofsim Dmeem Asur Lechatchila Lekadesh Behem Et Aisha. That you're not supposed to use these monies, Lechatchila, to Mikadesh and Isha, Dbinen Otam, Ichilufim Kidulim Dami Olo. So based on that Gemara Nidorim, it seems that it would be also Lechatchila to Mikadesh and Isha with them, but B'diavad would go through, and that's what our Mishnah in the end must be suggesting, is that B'diavad goes through, because Midrabanan Lechatchila, you shouldn't do it. The Tosfot Riya Zaken is coming to offset a position amongst some of the Rishonim, that because it's a mitzvah of Kiddushin, you should be able to do it the Chatchila even. That mitzvah of Kiddushin will override the Isur Drabanan to get Hana'ah from these items, and therefore will be even Mutar the Chatchila. The Tosfot Riya Zaken makes a point to say that in the Gemara Nedarim, it's clear that it does not differentiate between Kiddushin and other items, and therefore even for Kiddushin it remains Asur the Chatchila, even though Bidyavad goes through. But he is definitely rejecting another stream of thought, which is that the Kiddushin, since it's a mitzvah, would allow you the Chatchila to use this item, even though Midrabanan, it's a sur to be mishtamesh with monies that were generated through Isur Anah. The other thing that Tosafot raises over here is that we know that the Isur Anah in items is only if you do them derech hanatam, in the normal way that you would get hana from them. But if you do it shalok derech hanatam, there is no Isur Hana'ah on these objects. So Tosfot asks over here, if that is the case, then why isn't the woman married? If he gives her the Isur Hana'ah, so she can't get benefit from them in the normal manner, but she could get benefit from them in an unusual manner, and that could be worth a pruta. If it's worth a pruta, that's enough consideration to get married. They don't have to have their full value. As long as they're worth a pruta, that would be enough. So Tosfot gives two answers. One answer is, it's worth less, the lo shederech hanatan is worth less than a pruta, and that's why she doesn't get married. The second answer, which the Rishonim have given before as well, with the case of the Ma'ot Ma'aser Sheni, outside of Yerushalayim, when they're worth at least something outside of Yerushalayim, maybe a pruta, she should be able to get married with them, even though they only have real value up in Yerushalayim. The answer might be, is that that's not the woman's expectation. The woman has a certain expectation about what she got now. She got an item that she thinks she could get benefit that's worth a certain amount of money, and she could utilize it now. All of a sudden, she finds out that it's Isur Anah, and the value is significantly diminished, and she can only utilize them in this specific way, then it's Kiddushin Ta'ot, because that was not what her dot was on when she had the Kiddushin. Similar to what we said by the Ma'aser Sheni. Yes, it's worth maybe a pruta outside of Yerushalayim, but nevertheless, that's not what she had in mind. She had in mind that she got this huge amount of value that she could eat. Now, all of a sudden, she finds out she has to take up to Yerushalayim, and it's only worth the pruta here. That's not what she bargained for. And that's the same thing over here. She didn't bargain for that, and that's why maybe the Kiddushin don't go through, even if it's worth the pruta, shaloka derech hanata, even though there's significant enough value here to create the consideration, she thought she was getting regular items, not Isurei Hana. That whole problem makes it that it's ois Kiddushin, there's no Kiddushin over here. If she knows about it and accepts it, then it would probably work in Ochanami. Now the Gemara asks, Orla Minola. How do we know that Orla is a surbana? Orla are fruits from the trees in their first 3 years. The first 3 years, they're asur to eat. But the Gemara is now saying, not only asur to eat, they're also asurim ba'ana. What is the source for that? Titania, arilim lo yeachel. That you may not eat them because they are arilim. In the ala isur achila. Sounds from there that you're not allowed to eat them, but that's it. Hana'ah min ayin, shelo yehenneh mimenu, velo yitzbar bo, velo yadlik bo zener. How do I know that he cannot get any benefit from it? He cannot use it as a dye, or he cannot use it to light a candle. That's what it says. Isn't that subsumed that they're not getting benefit from it? Why is dyeing or painting with it, or using it for a ner? So that's what over here says, maybe in those two cases, you would think that there is a havamina, that it should be okay. Because maybe the dyeing or using it for coloring is shelo kederach hanatan. And so maybe that's okay to use it for that. Or, you're destroying the item. So yes, you're getting a benefit from the nair, but you're also destroying it, which is what you're supposed to do with it. So maybe that those two you would think are an exception. How do I know that none of those are allowed? Tamalomar, varaltem orloto. So this week's parsha says here the word orla appears numerous times, and therefore the rabotet kulam, to say that not only is it restricted in archila, but there's also this arel is something that we view negatively, something that is not allowed, meaning that's arel versus mila. So to hear, arelim versus mutar de achila, arelim are something that is asur. So the fact that it mentions the word so many times, arel in the pasuk, tells you not only is there an isur achila, there's also some other isur associated here, and that isur is an isur hana'ah. Bikilei akerem. If you, again, we've discussed kilei akerem a number of times, that's when you plant inside of a vineyard, you plant grains inside of the vineyard. We discussed what exactly or how exactly you are violating kilei akerem. But once you've done it, not only are they asur b'achila, but they're also asur b'ana'ah, minolon. Mechizki amakra, pen tikdash. Don't plant kilei akerem because they might become kodesh. Kodesh here means hekdesh. Hekdesh is something that you have to separate from. That's what Rashi says, the first Rashi in Kadoshim Tiyu. Shetiyu prushim min arayot. Kadosh doesn't mean holy. That's a mistranslation of it. Kadosh means segregated or separated. It could be because it's holy. It also could be because it's unholy or it's restricted. So that's what it says there, pentikdash. They darshan on that pentikdash, pen tukadesh. Because you might have to burn it. What does that mean? Pen tukadesh. Why would you have to burn it? You have to burn it because it's a surbana. That's what you do with the isurei hana. So the Gemara, based on that, says tukadesh tells you that not only is there an isur achila here, but there's also an isur hana. Rav Ashi Amar pen yek kodesh. Says, no, don't say that, don't read it as pen tukadesh, but rather it's an acronym for maybe it will become kodesh. So just like kodesh you can't get an offram, so to this you can't get an offram. When it says, if you want to make that comparison, then you would have to extend it further and you'd run into a problem. Ima kodesh tofeset damav yotzeh dechulin. By kodesh, if you transfer the object of kedusha into money, then the money, kedusha transfers on the money and the object becomes chulin. Af kilei akerem, you would think then, and by kilei akerem, if it's like kodesh, you could go and redeem it. You'll take the isurei hana'ah, move it onto the money, and then you could eat the fruits. Tofeset damav yotzeh dechulin. The reason must be like Chizkiyah, because if you open up this Pandora's box of comparing it to Kodesh, you're going to end up with rules that you are not true by Kilei Akerem. And therefore, Pen Tukadesh is the real limud as to why there's an Isra now over here. Shor Niskal is a shor that's been condemned to death. So here we're talking about a shor tam that kills an individual. Then the penalty here is Kol Yisakel HaShor, that the shor is put to death. And a killing person is subject to a death penalty. There are other cases of Shorim Niskal, where it was involved in bestiality, it was involved in other Isurim. Again, those are some of the questions that Rishonim asked. Why aren't these items mentioned in the Mishnah? So some of them say it's all subsumed under Shorim Niskal. Because Shorim Niskal can be the result of many different Aveirot. It could be bestiality, which is also something that creates an Isur Hana'ah, or it could be because the animal killed a human being. Minayin, how do you know that it's an Asur Hana'ah? Titania. Mimashma shenemar sakol yisakel ashor. The penalty for a shor that kills is that it's stoned. Eni yodea sheneve lahi. But if you stone the animal, of course it's a neve lah, because you didn't shecht it. Veneve lah surah b'achila. And we know that a neve lah you can't eat. Matomo momar lo yochelet bisaro. So then why is the pasuk to tell you can't eat its flesh? Of course you can't eat its flesh. It wasn't checked that it was stoned. Magid b'chash, im shachato, b'chash igmar dimo, asur b'achila. That comes to teach you that even if you shecht it after the gemar din, it's still asur b'achila. So there are two isurim here. There's one isur, which is if you stone it, you can't eat it. But that's obvious because that's a nevela. But even if you don't stone it, and instead you shechted it, you can't eat it. Because that's the isur. Lo yachel means even if you shecht it, it's still asur b'achila. B'ana'ah minay. How do I know that you're also asur b'ana'ah? Tamalomar u'balashor naki. That the owner of the shore is clean. Now the pashtura pasuk u'balashor naki, we're talking about a short time over here, is that the owner has no responsibility over here. Number one is because it was his money that killed. He did not kill. But also, we have no reason to hold him responsible for this because he didn't know. It was a short time until now, so it's been a placid, easygoing shore, and all of a sudden it acts in this manner. Now, had it done this on a regular basis, then he would have been held responsible because it would have been a short muad, and he'd have to pay kofar. But because it's a short tam, and he was unexpected, therefore, bala shor naki means that he is free and clear of any other responsibilities because he didn't do the killing, and he couldn't have anticipated the possibility of this in order to prevent it because it was a short time until this point in time. Gemara says, my mashma. Well, how do you know from Bala Shor Naki that means that there is an Isur Hana'ah over here? So Shimon ben Zomo, America, Adam Shomer Lechavero, Yetzah Ploni Naki Minechasav. That guy left without a penny to his name. That's what it means. Bala Shor Naki means he was cleaned out. So what does it mean he was cleaned out? He has no residual ownership in this animal. This animal was taken away from him and he was cleaned out of this animal. What does that mean, cleaned out of this animal? He no longer has any monetary value or ownership in this animal. How could that be true? Only if the animal is asur ba'anah. So not only is it asur ba'achilah, it's also asur ba'anah. This guy has zero left in this animal. That's what it means, bala shor naki. Mimai da'ai lo ya'achel et besero le'echi de'shochit achar shenigmar dino hu da'ata. How do you know that the scenario here is a case where he shechted it after the gemar din? Maybe if he shechted after the Gemara Din, it would be mutar. And the case of lo yachel is a case where he stoned it. Maybe that after Gemara Din, if you did shecht it, it would have been fine to eat it. And then lo yachel, we learn like this. The case where you stoned it, you're not allowed to eat it. In the case of Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Lazar, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Komakom Shneimar Lo Yachel, Lo Tuchav, Lo Tuchlo, Echad Isur Achila, Echad Isur Na, Ad Shifrat Lecha Ketuv, Kedera Shepar Lecha Benim Veila. That the word Lo Yuchal, Lo Yuchlo, Lo Yachel, embedded in them, is an Isur Ana. When you have an Isur Achila, automatically an Isur Ana comes along with it. Why is that? Because of the case of Nevela. But the case of Nevela was also restricted in Achila. Over there, the pasuk specifically says, "La gerasher bishacharecha titnenu o machor timkor lagoy," that you're allowed to either give it to a ger toshav or sell it to the goy. Why did the Torah have to specify that you're allowed to sell it to the goy or to give it to the ger toshav if it's only an asur ba'achila? It must mean that the isur achila is embedded in it in isur hana'ah. And the Torah here has to come and specify that you're allowed to get hana'ah. But what you see from that is that achilah is just a form of hana'ah. Achilah is just like an extreme form of hana'ah. And therefore, when the Torah says don't eat it, it means don't eat it and don't get hana'ah from it. It's all embedded in that word. Unless the Torah specifies otherwise, that it's mutar ba'anah. So what the Gemara is suggesting now is, forget your whole limud before that says that if you shecht it after the Gemara Din, it's asur ba'achilah, and then Bala Shor Naki makes it asur ba'anah. I'm going to disagree with that. I'm going to say, you know what? It's asur ba'achilah because it's a nevelah. Asur ba'anah, I'm going to learn that out of lo yachel. So lo yachel will teach you that not only is there an isur achilah because it's a nevelah, but it's also asur ba'anah. And therefore, if it was shechted after the Gemara Din, it would be mutar. Although the truth is, from the Gemara in Pesachim, Chizkiah here, who argues on Rabbi Abba, when says that the word yochal or achila does not automatically imply yisur hana'ah, he agrees when you use lo ye'achel that it does subsume within it yisur hana'ah. And so technically this doesn't even have to be according to Rabbi Abba, it could even be according to Chizkiah, who disagrees with him. It says that normally yisur achila does not include yisur hana'ah. He agrees when you use the term lo ye'achel that it does include it. Nevertheless, the Gemara brings the more obvious statement of Rabbi Abba, where it clearly applies, and at that conclusion, the Gemara in Pesachim that Chizkiah would agree in that case of Lo Yeachel. So Gemara says, Hani Mili, that only makes sense. Eicha Denafkalani Yisur Achila Melo Yeachel. That only makes sense when the Torah had to tell you don't eat it. The Torah tells you don't eat it. It uses the term don't eat it to mean both don't eat it and don't get hana from it. Over here, the Torah doesn't have to tell you don't eat it, because you already know you can't eat it because it is a nevela. So then to go express the isra na'ah as an isra achila doesn't make sense. Hacha isra achila misoko isakel nafka. The fact that you can't eat it is because it's being stoned. If you're telling me lo yachel is going to teach you an isra hana'ah, nichtov kra lo yehaneh. Just say it out, straight out. In the cases where you have to tell me you can't eat it, you can't get hana'ah from it, fine. So you express the isra hana'ah through achilah because they're both true. But over here, when I don't need the isra achilah because that I already know because it was stoned and it's a nevelah, then why would you go and express the isra hana'ah as a word of achilah? Here you need to express it as isra hana'ah because I don't need the isra achilah. So inami, lo yachel, et bisaro lamali. Or even if you want to say that it does express it through Lo Yachel de Yisra'ana, stop there. Et Bisaro Lomali. Why does it have to say Lo Yachel et Bisaro? What else are you going to eat? Of course you're eating the Basar. So why does it add it in? Avagav de Shachte Kein Basar Asur. That comes to teach you that even though you shechted it like basar, like normal meat would be, it's still asur, and therefore we end up in the same place, which is, even if you learn the Isur Hana'ah from Lo Ye'achel, there still is a restriction against shechting it after the Gemar Din, and eating it at that point. So whether you learn that out from the fact that it says Lo Ye'achel, therefore you can't shecht it after Gemar Din, or you learn it out from Et Bisaro, in either case scenario, if you shecht it after the Gemar Din, you can't eat it. Yes. And obviously there's an Isur Hana, whether you learn that from Lo Ye'achel or Baal Asher Naki, one of those two provides the Isur Hana over here. So Matkif La Marzutra. Rabbi Zutra says, maybe not. Maybe the case here is a case where he sharpened a stone, and then he did shechita with it, similar to the Haftorah and Yoshua, where they cut the stones, they sharpened the stones to give the people Brit Milah. So we know that sharp stones are used like knives. So in that case, it was to do a Brit Milah. Over here, it will be used for shechita. Why is that? The Mechzei Keskila. That's what the problem is. So if you're Sakol Yisakel, if you stone it, then there's an Isra Achila. Lo Ye'achel. If you shecht it, like stoning, it'd also be Asur Ba'achila, meaning that you took a stone and you shechted it. So the killing of the animal happened through a stone. In that case, maybe there's an Isra Achila. But if you shechted it with a regular knife, it would be Mutar Ba'achila. V'shachte b'sakin, lo. It'd be fun, totally fine. So Mar says, Midei Sakin Ba'adurai Taktiv. Since when does the Torah ever say you have to use a knife for shechita? Meaning that the only requirement in the Torah is to do shechita. It doesn't tell you the mechanism by which you do shechita, and therefore all shechitot are equivalent. Irrespective of the utensil used to create the shechita, shechita is shechita. And so therefore, it shouldn't matter whether you used a stone or a knife, you ended up with the same result, which is shechita. So if a stone is problematic, so is a knife. Or if a knife is not problematic, then neither is a stone, because the question of the Torah is not how you did it, it's just that you must do the shechita. Well, Tanya, we also have a braita. B'chol shochtim, you're allowed to shecht with any utensil. Ben b'tzur, ben b'schukrit, with a stone, with glass. Ben b'kumit shel kaneh, or you can use a sharp reed. You can see from that the utensil is not important in the shechita. And if you want to say that the primary vehicle for doing shechita is a knife, so maybe the Torah doesn't say, but the Chachamim say it. Here we have a Mishnah that tells you that it doesn't matter what you shecht with. As long as it's sharp, you can shecht whatever you want. So there's no preference given to one item or utensil over the other. And that means that they should be fungible. A stone and a knife should be fungible, and the din should be the same in both of those instances. If you're going to go down this route and say that you can learn out the Isra Achila and Isra Na from the word Lo Ye'achel, Hi, Baal Asher Naki, the Mayatam. Then what are you going to do with Baal Asher Naki? Before, with the Limud, use Baal Asher Naki to teach you there's an Isra Hana. According to Rabbi Abaham, Rabbi Lazar, you don't need that. You have Lo Ye'achel. What do you need Baal Asher Naki for? Banat Oro, to tell you that you can't get benefit from the skins. Sagadat Chemina Lo Ye'achel et Bisaro Ktiv. It says et Bisaro. Bisaro Asur Ba'oro Mutar. Basar is Asur, but its skins are Mutar. And you have to say et bisaro because we needed the limud. The limud told you et bisaro, which is something that you could have eaten. Even if you shecht it, it is still problematic, and that's what Lo Ye'achel bisaro comes to teach you. So you have to use the word et bisaro, but once you do that, it might have limited you to the Isra Na being associated with the basar, not the or. So therefore you have a Baal Asher Naki to teach you even the orot are asurim ba'ana. Kohanach Tanaei. Wait, we have other Tanaim that have a different usage for the words Baal Asher Naki. Baal Asher Naki comes to teach you that there's no such thing as Chatzi Kofer or Dmei V'Ladot, which is that if it was a Shor Mu'ad that kills someone, the Shor is killed, but the Balim are also Chayav Kofer. They're Chayav to put recompense to the individual. He has to pay a certain amount of kapara for the victim that was killed. The Gemara argues about whether it's the value of the victim or the value of the owner of the Shor because of the kapara. But either way, he has to pay. Also, if a Shor goes and attacks a woman who is pregnant and causes the woman to miscarry, over there, he's responsible for these Dmei V'Ladot. He's responsible for the miscarriage of the woman. He has to pay that value to the husband. That's only true by a Shor Mu'ad. By a Shor Tam, which we know the Torah says that there's only Chatzi Nezek, you pay half the value. So you would thought over here, maybe you would think that a Shor Tam that kills would have to pay Chatzi Kofer. or a short time that causes a woman to miscarry, you have to pay chatzit mei vladot. Along comes with Bala Shor Naki to tell you that the owner of the shore is clean over here. When it's a tam that kills, the Bala Shor has to pay nothing besides the loss of the shore that it's going to be niskal. So what you see from here is that there's no such thing as chatzit kofer, and there's no such thing as chatzit mei vladot. Chatzit that the tam pays is only relevant by nezek. It's not relevant by other penalties like kofar and mei vladot, and learn it out from Ubala Shor Naki. So hana'atoro minalu. For them, how do they know that hana'at from items besides the basar is restricted? Me'et bisaro. They learn it out of the et. Et hatafel bisaro. Et is an inclusionary term. It's a riboy. And et bisaro means include something that is derivative or secondary to the basar. What is that? That's the skins. The skins protect the basar. They're a derivative benefit of shechting the animal. You get the main item is the basar, but you also get the skins. So et bisaro teaches you not only is there an isra na bi bisaro, there's also an isra na by et bisaro. Things that are tafel, that are secondary or tertiary to the basar itself. Vidach et lo dorish. And the other opinion, if he doesn't use Bala Shor Naki to teach you, he thinks that at tam does have chatzit kofer and does have chatzit demei vladot, then he has the Bala Shor Naki available to learn out Isra now. What does he do with the extra word et? He says et is not significant. It's a preposition that's used. It's not something that you learn a drusha from. Kedetanya, we have someone who is Doresh the 18 Shabbatorah, which is Shimon HaMsuni, Bramla Nechemiah HaMsuni. There is a bright about Shimon HaMsuni or Nechemiah HaMsuni, Doresh Kol Etin Shabbatorah. He went through every et in the Torah and came up with a drusha. Kevin Shigiel et Hashem Lekech HaTira Peresh. He didn't know what to do. How could it be anything like God? If you have to fear God, how can you say at the Shem Lagech Tira that you have to fear something like God? That's just not true. Nobody's on the level of God. So he says, that's it. Amulot Tamidav, Rabbi, Koletin, Shidrashka, Mateelim. All the other drashot that you made until now with all these other 18, what are you going to do with them? He backed off and he says, I'm wrong. I can't use that as a reboy anymore because I found one place where it doesn't work. So my principle is wrong. Amalem, Kishem Shibalti Schar La Drisha, Kachabalti Ala Prisha. Just like I got reward for the drashot that I created, I get reward for distancing myself from those drashot. Or, in essence, it's just as important to admit when you're wrong as it is to be right. Because when you admit you're wrong, you're also doing something. You're learning Torah because you're saying that I'm wrong and this method of thinking or this method of drashot is inappropriate or improper. So that is also considered to be Limud HaTorah. So I will get value for that, or another way to view it is that the Isuk B'Torah is the reward. It's not the outcome or the results of your Torah learning. It is the actual toil in Torah learning that is the value. So I got that value. So I will get the same Limud or same reward for separating as I did if I was successful. I mean, that's not a results-based measurement of learning Torah. It is an efforts-based measurement. And so therefore, I will still get the reward. Those are the two possibility ways to look at what he says now. Ad Shabbat Rabbi Akiva, Vili made until Rabbi Akiva came along and taught us, Et Hashem Lekech Tira, the Rabot, Tamidei Chachamim. To come to include Tamidei Chachamim. There is somebody like Hashem, and those are the Tamidei Chachamim. This week, we start a Mishnayot Avot, between Pesach and Shavuot, in the Mishnayot and Avot, that's exactly how it describes the Chachamim. That a person should try to draw close to the Chachamim, because when you draw close to the Talmid Chacham, that's the equivalent of drawing close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yet, if you get too close to the Talmid Chacham, you could get burnt. Because, Nichishatam, Nichishat Takrav, Velichishatam, Nichishat Saraf, there's a cost to being too close to the Talmid Chacham, just like there's a cost to being too close to God. Someone gets too close to God, they get burnt. So too by Talmid Chacham, you see that there is this concept that you can, through a median who represents God, meaning Torah, which is God's blueprint for the world, and the Talmid Chachamim would have that Torah, when you get close to them, it's equivalent to getting close to God. But so therefore you have to fear them like you fear God, because just like when you get too close to God, if you don't treat God properly, there's ramifications to it, so too with the Talmidei Chachamim. Interesting, I heard from Rabbi Yaakov Shapira, in the name of his father, Rabbi Avraham Shapira, why is it here in particular that Rabbi Akiva was the one who learned this drasha, etet Hashem Elokecha Tira? I mean, what's unique about Rabbi Akiva that he figured out that the Talmidei Chachamim have the same din and you have to fear Talmidei Chachamim? So he says, there's a story in the Gemara that Rabbi Akiva at one point dealt with a mate mitzvah. We actually saw this Gemara. He found a mate mitzvah and he carried it back to the city and buried it. He goes to his Rebbe to tell him about this. And Rabbi Elazar ben Orkunos, his Rebbe, says to him that you're chayav mitah kol psia psia. You're chayav mitah on every step you took with the mate mitzvah, because mate mitzvah kone mekomo. Mate mitzvah is kone, its location. We find many places in Shas, he didn't say this, but I'm noting this in the Mishnayot, that Rabbi Akiva, through Svara, argues on other Tanaim that have either some sort of Mesorah, or are trying to use their Mesorah in a way, and Rabbi Akiva says, it's just not logical, it doesn't work, the logic's not there. So Rabbi Akiva was one who was a tremendous Lamdan, we know, and also used logic, the power of logic, and at that point he thought he was set. All of a sudden he does a maisa based on his logic and on all of his understanding, and it comes to his Rebbe, and his Rebbe tells him he's chayav mita. But Rabbi Akiva was then suddenly faced with is, no matter how much you learn, and no matter how much logic you have, you still need shimush tamidei chachamim. Because the application of the law is not simply based on intellectual understanding or logic. The application of the law is also subject to understanding how to do it, how to apply it, where it applies, and that only comes through shimush tamid chachamim. And that's when Rabbi Akiva came to the realization that the Shem Elkecha Tirah, the tamid chacham, is on that same level, in a sense, quote unquote, as God, because he is necessary in order for one to become the next tamid chacham, or able to do the right thing that God wants. You need shimush tamid chachamim. And through that incident, he realized that at the Shem Elkecha Tirah, that includes the Talmidei Chachamim. And that way he salvaged all the drashot of Shimon HaMamsuni, because now he had a drasha for all the Itin Shibat Torah, and therefore that method of drasha of Shimon HaMamsuni was correct, because now he found a way to do it, and we would uphold it. And this is one of those. Et Bisaro is, at the Tafel of Bisaro would be one example of one of those drashot of Shimon HaMamsuni. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph.